travelling from various different places because they want a reformed evangelical church, and when they look on the map to find one, there aren't really many locally. So you suddenly realise you've got cultural diversity in kind of lots of different directions, and some of those things you've got to figure out how best to balance them and that.
Hello and welcome to Independence FIOC podcast with me, Adrian Reynolds, Head of National Ministries for the FIOC. I'm a long way from home today. I've come up the A1 to the promised land. That is Stockton-on-Tees.
Yep.
And I'm here with Matt Oliver. Hello, Matt.
Hiya.
Nice to see you. And just tell us where we are, first of all.
So we are in Hardwick Baptist Church in our side hall.
Hardwick is an area of Stockton.
Stockton-on-Tees, yeah.
Great. And tell us who you are.
So my name is Matt Oliver. I'm pastor here at Hardwick Baptist Church. Here for just under 8 years.
Okay.
I'm married to Nancy. We've been married for just under 13 years. We've got three kids. Their ages 11, 10 and 8. We moved here from Doncaster in September 2015. I grew up in Sunderland, which is about half an hour up the A19 from here. I grew up there in a Christian family, went to church there, became a Christian at 13. My sister, my mum, my dad, a lot of my family still live there and still go to church there.
So you're close to home?
I'm close to home.
I know there's a football rivalry between Middlesbrough especially and Sunderland. Is there a kind of everything rivalry?
I'm
in the northeast.
Yeah.
But presumably if you're here, you don't think that way.
No, there's very much distinctive things. Sunderland, Newcastle, Middlesbrough, they're all very different.
So just up the
accents
road.
Are different.
So, well, help me.
Football's different.
I mean, to me, you've got, I love your accent, but is it a Sunderland accent?
Yeah, so, well, it is. It's less of a Sunderland accent than it would be if I was talking to my dad.
Okay. So you've acclimatised it a little bit, contextualised.
Years at university and then years away from Sunderland. Just mean I speak more with probably sadly a generic northeast accent rather than a very specifically Sunderland accent. Yeah.
And how old are the kids?
11, 10, and 8.
So about to go into that that slightly scary phase that's called secondary schooling.
Yeah. So our eldest, she's going there in September. Yeah.
Okay. And just tell us a little bit about the area where we are. So we're in Hardwick.
Yeah.
Which is a kind of, would you call it a suburb? It's kind of an area on the north edge of Stockton.
Yep. So we're right on the northwest side of Stockton. Hardwick is...
And it's literally fields then, isn't it?
Fields beyond us. It's fields beyond us.
Which sounds very rural, but fields are full of pylons.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're in what was a council estate really built end of the 1950s, early 1960s.
Church built at the same time?
Yep, church built at the same time. I think church is actually one of the first buildings completed.
Okay, so back in those heady days where developers and councils and whoever
wanted to put churches in places.
Places and buildings. Yes, if only that were the case now. Anyway.
Yeah. It's a mixed estate now. So probably a third is still kind of council or housing association run and managed. Yeah. Third of it will be privately owned. Probably a third of it will be privately rented. Although I think that last figure, maybe when the next census data comes out, I think that privately rented will be a lot higher. A number of houses that were sold recently have been bought by landlords. And that's partly because of where we are. We're not far from the hospital in Stockton. It's just at the bottom edge of the estate. And so a lot of people who move here to take in jobs in the hospital, rentals, you know, it's prime rental space really for them, at least in the short term. Mm-hmm. So you find that a lot of landlords have bought houses. Interesting, a lot of landlords who maybe don't come and see the houses. They live in London, they live somewhere in the south of England. They go, I can buy a house really cheap and rent it out and make plenty of money off it. They'll just buy it for cash and then it's job done, really. So, yeah, so that's probably increased. The estate as a whole is about 7,000 people-ish, about 3,000 houses. We would be the only kind of gospel-teaching church here, active in the community, really. So it's a lot of people.
How big is Stockton in totality?
Stockton town on its own, I think, is between 80 and 90,000. Okay. Stockton Metropolitan Borough Council, which takes in another kind of five towns round the outside, would probably then be double that.
Yeah. And then you've got Billingham out to one side and Middlesbrough, which are big places in them. Well, Middlesbrough especially, big places in themselves.
Yeah.
Their own district.
Yeah.
And what have you.
Yeah.
And the kind of, so not, I don't want to call it a blob, but when you look on the map, it's kind of, there's no space between them really, main roads perhaps.
It's the main roads. So Middlesbrough and Stockton really are split by the A19.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit more about how you came to the church. It's a great story. Love to hear it. How did you come to be here?
Yeah.
Apart from the fact that you basically spent your working in ministry life driving up and down the A1.
Yeah.
But how come Doncaster to here?
So we were in Doncaster for 3 years. I was working part-time at Grace Church in Doncaster. And that was always intended to be a training role, a kind of limited time contract really. And so coming to then look for a church job, basically my wife and I had kind of 3 or 4 criteria that we were looking at. So we wanted to be in the northeast of England, partly because Nancy's family are in Barnsley, my family are in Sunderland. We wanted to be regionally there. But we also knew that northeast as a region, particularly for me having grown up there and then Nancy having lived there for a while, we knew that there was big gospel need really in lots of different places. And so we wanted to go A, to a church in the northeast, B, to a church that was in an area where there was either little or no gospel witness, or that maybe that church was the only one in a particular area or one of a few in a larger, broader area. And we wanted to go somewhere basically that was going to be a deprived community, really. Again, of which there are lots in the north of England, but not necessarily.
So in terms of places, not churches at the moment, but in places, that doesn't necessarily narrow the field that much. There's lots of places that have and still have extraordinary gospel need in the northeast.
Yeah, so we weren't narrowing down a lot of places, but we weren't massively narrowing down kind of church jobs, because a lot of the churches in those places are either now very small and can't afford to employ anybody, or they aren't looking for anybody, or maybe actually just a lot of people, nobody knows that they're there, apart from maybe a handful of people in that local community.
So lots of need, but not lots of jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, so not a lot of jobs, not necessarily a lot of resources, particularly financially, and therefore, not a lot of jobs going. So we were praying about that, looking into that. There weren't really many or any for a while. We had a couple of conversations about possible options if there was funding or if this could happen.
That fell into place.
And none of it did. And then got an email from a lad who I knew from when I'd worked with UCCF as a staff worker. He's now pastor in FIC Church. He's called Tim Wilson. He read my prayer letter and he'd seen that I was looking for a job in the northeast, and he knew that Hardwick's minister at the time was retiring. So he messaged me and said, I think it might be a good fit for you if that's what you're looking for. Why don't you kind of get in touch with them? So I thought, I'll wait and see if the advert comes up somewhere, and if it does, I'll apply. Mm. Kind of nothing came of it into the next year. This is kind of end of January time. So I thought, I'll see if I can find the church website. Found it. It did say our pastor's retiring. We're going to be looking for a new minister. We'll have a kind of application process soon. So I just dropped them an email through the contact form on the church website and said, hi, this is who I am. This is what I'm looking for. I see you're looking for, do you have an application pack or anything you can send me? And basically an email straight back from the church secretary saying, yes, we're just putting it together. I'll send it out to you. 2 days later, I dropped on my doormat in Doncaster. So I applied for it. Church invited me up initially just to come and visit the church.
Did it tick all your boxes?
And it did tick all the boxes, and yet, interestingly, after that first visit, we were on the way back home and thought, that's probably not where we're going to go. We'll look for something else.
Why did you think that?
I think it was a number of things, really. I think a lot of them were selfish. We got there and there weren't really many adults our age or in our stage of life. Most of the adults were older than us and kind of kids grown up and whatever else. And the church service we were at in the morning, I think there were only probably 2 other kids under 16. And they were our kids at the time were really little. So in fact, when we first came, my wife was pregnant with our 3rd child. So we had 2 kids under 3. And there were just no other kids. And we just thought, that's going to be really hard bringing up kids in a church where they don't have any peers and all this kind of stuff. So a lot of it was more selfish reasons. And then over the course of time, the next couple of months, we talked to people, we prayed about it. We went back to those criteria I just mentioned. Thought, you know what? If this church calls us or calls me to be the pastor, actually, it's exactly what we've been praying for. It's pretty obvious, isn't it, that this is where God is taking us, we would say. So yeah, and then since the rest is history, I came up and preached with a view to come in, visited the church, was interviewed by the deacons and by the church and church family.
Sunderland accent didn't put them off.
No, it didn't. I mean, I did say to them, interestingly enough, when the church interviewed me and people asked various questions, variety, as you can probably imagine, from the sublime to, not want to say the ridiculous, but that kind of range of questions. And somebody did then say to me, well, I said to them, actually, you know, if you choose to call me and employ me, I am going to make all my mistakes on you, because this is the first church I'll be taking on as a pastor. And they still called me, so they obviously weren't too put off.
And you're still here after 8 years.
I'm still here after 8 years.
Yeah, that means something.
God has been very faithful and gracious to do that. So, yeah, that's how we came really to be here, and it's been good. It's had its ups and downs, as I think every church minister who might be listening to this will know.
Of course,
God has been very good.
And how's the church changed over that time, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the ways he's been good. It's not all about numbers of people, but the church congregation has grown, which is great. I think the church family who are here have probably grown spiritually. I think that we've seen some people return to the church who'd kind of left it, left church full stop, or left this church a long time ago and have come back, which is great, and we've seen them grow. We've got some more younger families. The demographic has probably shifted. It was much more weighted towards the kind of over 60s in terms of the adult population in the church. That's now more of a spread. So yeah, it's been very good. Financially, God has been very gracious to us as well. I think it's probably changed a little bit in terms of the age demographic and therefore that dynamic. I think it's changed in, we probably have a few more people who are from the local area attending, even if they've not kind of come to faith yet. And we also now, and this is more of a broader change in, I think, deprived communities or council estates or maybe even northern towns, we have a wider ethnic diversity than we would have had even when I was here. And if you went back 20 or 30 years, much more so in the
wider surprise people
area.
Because you tend to think of sort of white working class estates sort of classically. But actually, people come and work in hospitals, don't they? People come because the housing is cheaper. And so actually areas change very rapidly, don't they? Have you seen that even in 8 years?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. So, I mean, just recently, so within the last 12 months, we've probably had three families who originally from Nigeria have joined us, a couple for working in a hospital, others because they were living in places like Reading or Birmingham or outside of London, that kind of area, and just all their money was going out on food and rent and bills, and they had nothing else, nothing to send back to family, nothing to kind of do anything fun with, and just looked and thought, we need to live somewhere cheaper. We still need a job in the, you know, the fields that we work in. And that is literally what one guy did. He looked up jobs in cheaper places to live on Google, and the job came up with a hospital here, and he saw the rent disparity between where he was living and here, and just thought, this is a no-brainer. I can work in basically the same job, getting the same pay, and pay half the rent. So they live just the other side of the estate, and they've started coming to us, which is great.
I mean, we're all becoming cross-cultural workers, aren't we? Which is interesting because, you know, you go through your training. You know, perhaps if you're thinking about mission work, or you're thinking about going to, I don't know, East End of London where I was, and you've got 60 nationalities in the church already, you think, oh, I'll take the module, or I'll read the book or whatever on cross-cultural work. But actually, we're all working in cross-cultural work. And even when you've got age ranges within church, the differences in culture now between Christians in their 70s who have grown up as Christians all through the 50s and 60s and so on, and teenagers who are Christians. Even that is crossing cultural barriers, isn't it? And we've got to be set up for that, haven't we, in church life?
Yeah, I mean, I think you suddenly realise there's questions all over the place, isn't there?
So, for example, like, what sorts of things is it, what sort of questions is it raising here?
So I think traditionally you've got, so thinking about the age culture, the older generation are used to, we do two services on a Sunday, we do a midweek meeting.
Right.
That's
so there's kind of there's a rhythm to Christian life, which is holy.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not that necessarily that's a bad thing, but then you get a generation or a cultural difference where actually church is just Sunday morning. It might be a long Sunday morning. So actually it would be the service plus a meal plus chatting afterwards. Yeah. But that's it. And there's not really much else that they've been used to in a calendar week. So there's differences there. You get, which some of that's age, some of that's ethnicity, some of it's, you know, even class culture. I think you get differences there too. And so we as a church are in a sense quite broad in that way too. People traveling from various different places because they want a reformed evangelical church, and when they look on the map to find one, there aren't really many locally. So you suddenly realize you've got cultural diversity in kind of lots of different directions, and some of those things you've got to figure out how best to balance them. And I'm not saying we do them well. I'm sure we do a lot of them very badly, but it's realizing they're there, I guess, and then figuring out how you manage them from there.
Yeah. So actually you're thinking as leaders about, for example, a Sunday evening service,
yeah,
or whether to have small groups instead of a midweek meeting, yeah, becomes not just about tradition.
Yeah.
Or about, you know, how can we do something better? How can we insert this? How can we insert that? But actually you're juggling these different cultures, aren't you, at the same time, with kind of competing interests.
Yeah.
And juggling norms as well. You're not just trying to introduce a new norm. People have got very different norms to begin with. I remember when I was pastoring a small Grace Baptist church down in Hampshire, and we were trying to think about Sundays a little bit differently and how we introduced different things. We basically had one norm that everyone shared.
Yeah.
And we were trying to say, no, let's try doing this.
Yeah.
But now you're describing a situation where you've actually got many kind of normal models that people have. And so it has to be a bit more give and take at that point, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think there does. And I think we're probably going to come more into that in the coming years, because I think our dynamic has probably shifted probably quite rapidly in 12, 18 months, probably post-COVID is some of that too.
Yeah.
And so actually we need to probably get on our toes and think, right, what's this going to look like? Mm. What's the expectation potentially? And I'm raising questions here I've not thought about necessarily, but you know, what's the expectation on those who become church members? What are they expected to be at, not be at?
Yeah.
How much can you make that prescriptive? How much can you not? Yeah, church leaders.
Yeah, if you don't attend everything in church, traditionally you'd never have been considered to be an elder.
Yeah.
But is that still a burden we can place on people? I'm not sure it is.
Yeah, no, it's a
good
question.
But thinking that through, that's not easy, is it?
Yeah.
One of the other things we talked about earlier that I thought would be good for us to talk about on the podcast as well is something that you've got and lots of churches have, and I've been in churches like this, where you want to be a church for where you are.
Yeah.
The Lord has given you this place and this estate with its needs, and you want to reach out. But inevitably, with the decline of churches elsewhere, I don't know how Stockton is a huge place you're just describing. How many other kind of gospel centered churches would there be in Stockton? A handful, presumably.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So it's where the theological, I want to say, the bigger, probably second tier issues are. That's where we would probably be very much on our own.
But people who are looking for a reformed Bible preaching, warm hearted contemporary church, there's not a lot of options.
No.
So they're coming to you from off estate.
Yeah.
And I drove in through here, very mixed area, all kinds of different places.
Yeah.
How do you, let's just talk about this. And I realize we're talking about stuff, you know, perhaps you haven't really thought through yet, and I haven't really thought through, but it's useful for us to talk about it.
Yeah.
There's a challenge here, isn't there, with being a church for the people the Lord has brought through the door.
Yeah.
They are the flock. We are to be shepherds of the flock, you and I. And who are the flock the Lord has given us? They're the people who are walking through the door. But we're also to be a mission outpost.
Yeah.
And we're kind of holding these things in tension, aren't we? Just tell us some of the things that throws up for you.
It is a massive challenge. It's something I've thought a little bit about, but
I still think we don't necessarily do it really live well. On the estate, roughly.
So if you're talking about people who are church members, there's probably only 10 to 15% live on the estate,
right,
church members. If you talk about people who attend the church on a Sunday, that would increase. Yeah. So particularly some of the people who've joined more recently, they've rented houses or bought houses.
Sure. So they're not members. They're people who could be members.
They could be members, but aren't at the minute. So there's a little bit, the proportion increases if you start to broaden that out a little bit. But again, it's vast majority people who live elsewhere. And they drive in from all sorts of places. It's not just that they're in the next suburbs of Stockton. We have people who come from Yarm, which is 15, 20-minute drive that way. You've got people who come from little villages just outside of Stockton. You've got people who travel in from kind of, I guess, almost out towards Darlington way, but not into Darlington. And so you then suddenly realise, imagine if you do a ring around the church, you've probably got people coming in from at least a 10-mile radius, maybe further than that, which just means then effectively you're reaching Stockton and a bunch of other towns.
Yeah. But presumably some of those places are just one person coming or a couple coming from there. It's not like there's a whole home group ready to go.
Yes.
In
exactly.
Wherever, suburb of Darlington.
Because ideally, but like for me and I think for the church, they know this is partly my heart and I think it's the heart of the elders as a whole, is we'd love to plant a church and say, right, why don't you guys go there? Because it's closer, you're all nearer to it. But then you've got the problem of, well, have we got enough leaders to send to plant a church? Have we got a space to do that? And there's the questions are, as well, yeah, there's a lot of different questions that you then have to answer on that. But yeah, we haven't got, it's not all clustered. They're kind of scattered everywhere. So it does make it a really challenging thing when, I guess, the heart of the people and the heart of the church, at least verbally as well, would be, we want to reach the local estate because nobody else is doing it. But at the same time, I'm convinced the best way to do that is to live in the local community, which the vast majority of the church doesn't. So there is a bit of a clash and tension there. Mm. I think we've got people coming
who do live in local communities, just not this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a tension there, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think being clear about what the church is really helpful in that. So I think without, you know, embracing all the language of vision and mission and all that sort of trendy stuff, just knowing what the church is trying to do. Yeah. I think that's a really key part of leadership, isn't it? Yeah. The church I was in, I was like that. I was one of those commuters in.
Right.
Okay, I have to confess my sins. Well, only because there were no other churches around. And we travelled across the town to another part of town, quite a bounded estate of housing association properties.
Yeah.
And the church, I think, didn't really know what it wanted to be.
Right.
It wanted to be a church for the estate, but I don't think, and I was one of the leaders for a time, I don't think we could ever bring ourselves to say that.
Yeah.
Because actually we realised a lot of people were coming to the church from off the estate. But actually I think we do owe it to people to be honest about what the church is trying to do. And even then to say to people, you're really valuable to us, because actually perhaps you live in a smarter area, perhaps you have a different kind of job, actually you can finance work here, for example, and we want you to have a heart for what goes on here. One of the greatest things I think you then see is you see someone from off the estate coming and taking part in a toddler group for the estate, whatever it is, and you see people with a heart. But I think, so I'll give you a chance to talk in a moment, I'm just rambling on now. I think the challenge there is we forget as pastors to help those people live as Christians where they are as well.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is absolutely. And I think just some of the examples you gave there, we have got people doing that. They live decent way out from here, but they are coming in middle of the week and either serving in a toddler group or helping with a youth group or coming in doing a craft group. They get it. Absolutely.
And praise the Lord for people like that.
Oh, yeah, most, we don't want to, most don't definitely.
Belittle that, do we? That's no, really not important. At
all. It's brilliant. But there is always that tension of, how do you reach the estate well while also looking after what is a larger congregation of people who are from all over the place?
I wonder if one of the ways, I'm just thinking aloud here, one of the ways we can do that is we think actually that the programs are centered on the church.
Yeah.
So your toddler group or a youth group, whatever it is, that's located, isn't it, where the building is. And we want people who belong to the church and come to the church regularly to really buy into that. But we also are sending people out into the world, wherever they are, whether they work in the hospital, whether they work at Amazon, whatever it is. So actually, in that sort of 1 Peter way, we want to send people out into the world to live for Jesus, wherever they are.
Yeah.
And actually, if at some moment they're able to say to a neighbour, you know, they live 5 miles away, but they're able to say to a neighbour, oh, I go to church, you know, somewhere else, why don't you come with me?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I think that was the hardest thing we used to find. And I'm just not sure if there's any way around this, is inviting our neighbours to somewhere they wouldn't, you know, wouldn't be on their radar.
Necessarily travel to, yeah. Yeah.
And they might come to hospital here.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's a church just by the hospital. Maybe that's the way to do it.
Yeah, maybe that is the way to do it, yeah.
Now, tell us what's encouraging in church, because there's some exciting news coming up, isn't there? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we as a church applied to the FIC Training Fund to part fund a trainee women's worker role. So we advertised for that earlier this year. We've had some applications for that, and actually the interviews for it are next week.
Right.
So this time next week, I think I'll be mid-interview actually, from the timings we've got for it. So you could pray with us for that and thank God that we had some applications, but pray that we have the right lady for the job at the right time, so that we can both train them up and enable them to serve in that way, but also for the life of the church. I think it'll be great, both internally and externally. So we
tell us about both of those. How will that make a difference to you, that position? Because lots of churches are thinking about women's workers, and actually lots of churches in harder to reach places are discovering that appointing a women's worker just really opens up lots of opportunities.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about both internally and externally, how you see that as as blessing the church and its work?
So I think for two reasons, well, internally and externally. So externally, there'll be more women on the estate than there would be men.
Right.
And internally, I think we've got more female members and attenders. So there's partly it's just a logical thing of, we're more women than men. And so that will be, there's lots of things that could be done, women who could be supported internally, you know, read the Bible with, book groups, that kinds of thing that would help mature the Christian women, and probably some personal related things that would be harder for women to then, I guess, speak to a male elder about or somebody else about, that they might feel more able to and get to the bottom of more quickly. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not that we then say as elders, right, pastoral care of women is just somebody else's job, because it still is our responsibility, but that dynamic then changes, I think, and is helpful. So we're hoping that will be something long-term, be better. And externally, like I say, we have a craft group that meets here. It's all women who come to that.
Right, okay.
And some of them are locally from the estate, some are from the church family. We have a...
So you come with your knitting, do you, and your crocheting?
Yeah, or whatever, you want to do. Yeah, I mean, people say, oh, knitting. I said, if I tried to knit, I'd knit my fingers together. I'd tie my fingers together. But we also have a toddler group that runs during the week, and the vast majority of people who come to that are either the mams or nanas or aunties or whoever it is.
So you're actually talking about staffing your current evangelistic opportunities.
Yeah,
really.
Partly. Yeah. So it's staffed now by volunteers, which is wonderful, and they do a great job. But we're aware that actually there is... I guess there's more that could be developed through those things if we had somebody who was set aside to do that as their full-time job, really.
Yeah.
And it's mainly a training role. It would have been a training role whoever applied, because in reality we go, well, even if you have somebody who's done women's work elsewhere, just it's context.
Context is so different.
We're looking at appointing somebody and hopefully training them through various means. One of the things we're going to get them to do is the Medhurst Women's training course. Yeah. They'll be part of that training, and then some of it will be internally. Some of it will just be mentoring and personal support, really, from an older, more mature Christian in there.
Well, it's great that the training fund's been able to help with that.
Absolutely.
And when the application came in, as with many applications, the training fund, just really exciting to read, you know, churches having a heart and a vision. And very often the thing that's missing are... you know, is the resources and the money to make it happen.
Absolutely, yeah.
So actually, you know, stories where you hear about churches giving, you know, church in a more affluent area giving to support another church to support this kind of role, really exciting, because that's kind of the heart of gospel partnership.
Oh, yeah, really, absolutely. And so we're very thankful for that. So hopefully one of the candidates is suitable next week. We'll be...
Well, we'll be praying for that. By the time this goes out, the appointment will be made. So maybe we'll put a link in the notes to your website, so we can have a look at who's been appointed to the role. Just as we finish, people will be listening to this. I hope they'll be encouraged. They'll want to be praying, perhaps get the churches praying. Tell us what is encouraging you. What can we, you know, we're told to rejoice with those who rejoice. What are you rejoicing in that we can rejoice in too, first of all? And secondly, how can churches in the FIC be praying for you at the moment?
Great. It's wonderful, isn't it? I think you're right to highlight that partnership in prayer is great. And it's good to have that locally, but it's also good to have that more broadly. So I think what's been encouraging is, I think, like I say, the church has grown numerically, and we've had a number of different people from different ethnicities and backgrounds joining us recently, which is great. And I think just wanting to use that well, to serve them wisely, but to see that be of benefit to the church in lots of different ways. By the time this goes out, this might have happened too, but on the 24th of June, we've got a family fun day, so it's something that is now a known thing in the community. People kind of expect it to happen, which is great.
Do you have that here?
We use the inside and the outside of the building and have various things on. So that's a good opportunity for us to reach out. Generally encouraged. I think the church family are overall generally encouraged with the way things are going, with just kind of fellowship. And we have a very lovely, very committed, very caring church family, which is great,
you can't take that for granted.
No, you can't. And I think my wife and I have benefited from that massively so we're very thankful for those things. And pray for this women's worker role. Pray that the right person comes in, that we can train them well, that would be good for gospel ministry here and potentially elsewhere. There may be ways in which that helps us to serve other people. And long term, we want to be able to use the resources we've been given to potentially train other people in other roles, whether they then stayed with us or went elsewhere. And just, I guess the prayer would be that we have lots of contacts in the estate, which is wonderful. But for a lot of them, it's figuring out, well, how do we How do we progress those from people who say hello, people who would speak well of the church, people who we know, to getting them into, well, how are we going to get somebody to read the Bible with them? Are they going to come along to a Hope Explored course, or how are we going to develop those relationships so that we can see people saved, really? And I think that's the challenge, coming back to what we were talking about earlier, of having a mixed congregation, some who live locally but most who live out, is developing those relationships takes longer when you're not seeing people every day wandering around. So that's probably a big challenge for us evangelistically, but we can be very thankful to God that he's blessed us in lots of ways.
Thank you so much, Matt. Great to have talked to you, to hear a bit more about the area and get people praying. Thanks for spending time with us, and thanks for listening to Independence FIC podcast. If you like the podcast, if you rate it and review it, it just helps other people find it, so please do that. And we'll catch up with you soon.